My name is David Paulson. I'm a member of the Society for American Baseball Research. And I'm over at Camden Yards today on November the 20th. I'm in the office of Mr. Sherman Kerbel. Mr. Kerbel, what's your title?
Director of Facilities Management for the Maryland State Authority.
Okay, but primarily I guess you deal with Camden Yards.
Well, Camden Yards is a misnomer. Camden Yards is the entire 95-acre site. It's Oriole Park at Camden Yards, Ravens or now M&T Bank Stadium at Camden Yards. It's the warehouse at Camden Yards, and also the railroad station, or the B&O railroad station at Camden Yards, which we're in the process of refurbishing.
Okay.
So, no, I'm responsible for everything, baseball, football, warehouse,
On
the 95-acre.
We'll be sending a copy of this tape to the Hall of Fame, but Sabin reserves the right to distribute the tape or transcriptions of the interview to other researchers and post it on the internet. Is that okay with you?
Fine.
Tell me a little about your background.
My background is a combination of engineering, a little bit in the Air Force, a lot in industry, primarily maintenance and operations. Maintenance for 25 years, bricks, mortars, facilities management. Worked for 13 years in the record industry, in the manufacturing side of between magnetic tape and records. About 15 years in the defense industry, and the last 12 or 13 years here at, in the sports industry, I guess you could say. But brick and mortar is brick and mortar.
Okay. Have you been here since Camden Yards opened?
Yes. I was hired in 1991 to transition from construction to operations, baseball operations. And I've been here ever since in the capacity as director of facilities operations. Of course, the space is grown. There's a lot more going on now than was when we just opened up the ballpark.
Now, prior to 91, were you involved in any way with the construction of the stadium?
None. No, I answered an ad in the paper that said they were looking for a stadium engineer, manager, I'm not even sure of the exact wording, and I sent in a resume, and the rest is history.
Do you know a little about the background of Camden Yards, the negotiations or how it came about?
I know, yes, the history.
Yeah.
Primarily not totally direct knowledge, but from dealing with the people who actually made it happen. My understanding is when, Everett Williams bought the Orioles, there was some discussion about moving the Orioles to the Washington area, Columbia, someplace south.
Fine with me.
The then Mayor Schaefer, who later became our Governor Schaefer, believed very strongly that the Orioles were an integral part of Baltimore, and so did a lot of other people. So through a whole lot of effort, they formed various organizations which helped the Orioles sell tickets and tried to convince Everett Bennett Williams to stay in the Baltimore area. I don't remember the year, but the Colts had moved out. I was not living in the area at the time. And the Colts had moved out, and the Maryland Stadium Authority, a few years thereafter, was chartered by the state
legislature.
As an executive branch of government, we're under the governor's office rather than the legislative, to bring football back to Baltimore, which was the prime charter. About that time is when Everett Williams started talking about moving the team to out of Baltimore, and discussions were opened up to build the Orioles a new stadium, a new ballpark.
With the idea of keeping them
in Baltimore. The Stadium Authority had been formed, chartered, and whatever. And evidently there was no football team on the horizon at that time, so the powers that be felt it was very important to keep the baseball team, otherwise Baltimore would lose a significant portion of its identity. Through negotiations with the Orioles, and at that time, I believe they started under the Everett Bennett Williams regime, but he passed away somewhere along the way there. And this is all before my time, so the timeline is a little fuzzy. And the Orioles were bought by a man by the name of Jacobs.
Eli Jacobs.
And negotiations were with the Jacobs organization. Larry Lucchino was president of the club at the time, and the Orioles and the Stadium Authority, who was the surrogate for the state at the time, came to an agreement about building a new baseball park. I understand there was a significant site search, and then almost by force of will, Governor, at the time I think he was Governor, Schaefer, picked the Camden Yards site. There was significant condemnation of businesses, relocation of businesses, and whatever to create that, and here we are.
Have you ever met Mr. Lucchino?
Yes.
I understand he was really the guiding force behind keeping, you know, getting after the people and keeping on doing.
There is a very, it depends on who you talk to. I know Larry Lucchino, I won't say well, but I know him more than a passing acquaintance. He is a very, I don't want to use the term demanding, because that's not true. He's a very focused individual who has definite goals in mind and wanted to achieve those goals, both for the team and, I guess a strong point for the people in the city of Baltimore and the state of Maryland. I think he really was interested in that, as well as furthering the interests of the team. And he brought in Janet Marie Smith as a architect, if you will, architectural advisor. The Stadium Authority had retained HOK
out of Kansas City
as the primary architects on the building. And between a lot of pushing and pulling and jumping up and down and whatever, we created, or they created, because I can't take any credit for this, they created what was really the first new ballpark in about 20 years, but the first of the dedicated ballparks that have been built at least as long as that, and bring back the old-time feeling to baseball. The purpose of that was, you know, up until then there have been a lot of baseball-football combination stadiums. It didn't work well for baseball, didn't work well for football.
They all seem to be the same.
They were all the same, they were all a cookie cutter, and part of the problem is the geometry of the fields. For baseball and football, the requirements were so different. So, Oriole Park was built, I think, as a, not only I think, but several people think, as a traditional baseball park,
baseball-only
park, with modern accoutrements and construction techniques and whatever, so that there are no poles, for instance. It's all cantilevered building and there are no obstructed sight lines, and yet, and because it's an asymmetrical ballpark, you know, it's right in the left field, it is different. It became exciting for the fans. It's a great place to watch a baseball game. And we became the cookie cutter for every baseball park that's been constructed since. You know, there are always going to be changes. There are things that was learned from this one that, you know, the next ballpark incorporated and whatever. But overall, this is the way people are building ballparks. I mean, we talked to HOK, and we still have an ongoing dialogue and relationship to them. So anybody comes to them and wants to build a ballpark, they ask them, what do you want? They said Camden Yards, or Oriole Park in Camden Yards.
Tell me a little about Janet Marie Smith. I know HOK was the architect, but how did she fit into the picture?
Janet Marie Smith was the Orioles' architectural representative, if you will. I probably have the title wrong, but that's in effect what she, I believe she's an architect in her own right, and was very instrumental in a lot of the fits and finishes around the ballpark, and the look of the ballpark, the classic look of the ballpark. Now, was she the total motivating force? some people have given her a lot of credit for being, you know, the prime conceiver of this building. HOK feels that they were the, so I'm not getting involved in the architectural dispute. All I know is, as a finished product, it would not have come out the same without her being here. Now, she really cared, and she really looked at this as being her personal project. So, and she's a good person to work with. She's now, I'll work with, I believe she's now with Larry Lucchino again up in Boston. He's president of the Boston Red Sox. And before that, I forget which ball club.
She went with Atlanta.
Ted Turner in Atlanta.
Probably did the same thing there.
Right. Well, there was a little different down there in that they had to get the stadium, turn it into an Olympic stadium, and then turn it back into a baseball park. And I'm not sure at what level her involvement was down there.
Now, I believe, I don't know if you knew about this, there was a sort of a controversy about building the park with steel or concrete. Because concrete apparently was the ones that were, the previous ones, Three Rivers Stadium and ones in Pittsburgh and so forth.
I did not know about the controversy, but I know there was a controversy about whether to leave the warehouse building up or not. And I think once the decision was made to leave the warehouse building up, the architecture of the ballpark was dictated by the fact that you needed to match the warehouse. You wouldn't have wanted to put up a concrete ballpark without putting, you know, you needed the brickwork. And the brickwork lends itself very well to steel. Now, that's not to say that there's not a lot of concrete in here, because there's a tremendous amount of concrete here. I don't know how they resolved the contract, the controversy from an architectural point of view. In fact, I never had heard of it as being a controversy. But I'm very glad we did steel rather than concrete.
Steel gives it that old-time look.
That old-time look, right. In fact, you painted the right color, you know, from the distance. And I keep thinking, I grew up with baseball, and I was going to Ebbets Field. That was my father's whatever. And the Polo Grounds and whatever. And, all right, it doesn't look the same as the Polo Grounds. It doesn't look the same as Ebbets Field, but it feels the same. And I think the steel and the seating and whatever, now, keep in mind, I was 10 years old, or 12 years old when the Dodgers and Giants moved out of the New York area, but I still have fond memories, and of course, I went to the Mets games at the Polo Grounds for a lot of years, because they originally played Polo Grounds before Shea Stadium. So.
Now, I heard that, can you tell me a little about the warehouse?
Well,
the history of it?
The history of the warehouse, let me tie it in with the history of the site. The B&O Railroad Station that's located here is the oldest railroad station in the United States. It was actually Lincoln went through there on the way, in fact, wrote the Gettysburg Address in the waiting room of the B&O Railroad Station here in Baltimore, in the VIP waiting room where the
I thought he wrote it on the train.
No, he actually wrote it here. That's what the... I'm not going to get involved in a historian. I've just been... I've been shown the spot that he supposedly had written it. Okay. Now, the other piece of history of this, to understand the railroad site here, is that at the time of the Civil War, and I'm pretty sure up until the early 1890s, there was no through traffic through Baltimore South. Everything stopped here and had to be, there was no tracks. The, where Union Station is now, and I may be a little bit fuzzy on the locations, was the southern terminus of the Northern Railroads. And where this railroad station is now was the northern terminus of the southern railroads. And I guess you'd have to go out through Pennsylvania and whatever, there were some other connections. So, at some point, the B&O Railroad decided, in order to tie everything together and make this a hub, and I'm a little fuzzy on this because I'm not really a railroad historian, they decided what they needed here was a warehouse or holding terminus. And the first section of the warehouse was built from the northern end to the what we refer to now as the breezeway, which is about I guess it is something like it's more than a halfway, but not quite two-thirds of the way down. 15/16 or something, not 15/16 anyway. What do you mean? Five eighths of the distance. I think it's 63% of the distance for the warehouse. And the warehouse itself is 50 feet wide and 8 stories tall plus the basement. And it was built in those days from the footers were rock hewn somewhere up in Catonsville where there were quarries, and I guess horse drawn down the northern way. And if you walk through the warehouse, you can still see the drill marks in the footers. And there are cast iron columns for the first 3 floors of the warehouse, and wooden columns the rest of the way up, and all the beams are wood. And then around 8 to 10 years after that. Now keep in mind, the east side of the warehouse was literally a railroad yard. It was a marshaling yard for freight trains and whatever, and somewhere they cut through and connected the two railroads, the Northern and the Southern Railroad. In fact, the original tunnel is still here. You can't directly see it from the warehouse, but you can go around. And whereas 2-3 years ago when we had that tunnel fire, that was the tunnel that it was in, goes underneath a significant portion of Baltimore. So the warehouse was built to promote commerce and to tie the two...
It's over 100 years old.
Oh, yes. Yes, the original part was built in the mid to late 1890s, and the newer section, I believe, was 1905, 1908, something like that, and tied together. It is the longest building east of the Mississippi that the U.S. government doesn't own. And the reason I say it that way is you don't know what the government owns. And it's also one of the narrowest ones. But there's a 500,000 square feet of space in that warehouse, built with tremendous timbers to take a lot of weight, because the way it was used is a train would pull up on the east side of the warehouse. The west side of the warehouse was city street. And therefore, the trains would...
Utah Street still is.
The trains would unload, go through the... where if the cargo was to be picked up immediately, they would unload it onto a truck or whatever. You know, the full length is probably... Well, the full length of the warehouse is 1,035 feet, so 60% of that is 600 feet. So you had 600 feet of throughput, where trucks on one side, trains on the other, you could move a lot of merchandise. And then... anything that was not to be moved immediately or whatever went into storage in one of the upper floors. And they had the appropriate elevators in those days, which I believe were horse-drawn or steam-driven or whatever. I have no real knowledge of that. And when the decision was made to keep the warehouse, excuse me. So, where was I a moment ago?
The movement of the
merchandise. So this became a very both a warehouse and a transportation center for the area. The trains were on the east side, truck traffic, and this became an industrial area right in the heart of downtown Baltimore. Also in Baltimore, and this was a piece of history that I picked up on much later on, and whatever, it had nothing to do with railroads per se, but Baltimore evidently had a very thriving industry in selling building fronts, or prefabricated buildings, cast iron building fronts, and up on, it's not Russell Street, Pratt Street. There are a couple of the last remaining, after whatever, the 1910 fire, 1908 fire, these building fronts, and these were shipped by both rail and barge and ship all over the world as a Baltimore export product. So this was a very busy railroad yard.
Now what's in the warehouse now?
In the warehouse now, well, first of all, I should say the only steel we put into that building is in the elevator towers and the fire stairs. The rest of the building is still supported by the original wooden and cast iron columns and wooden beams. The building now on the bottom floor houses some utility spaces and locker rooms for the Orioles, Ushers, Aramark employees who vend in the stand. And some of my mechanical shops for, you know, to support them.
This is the underground?
This is underground. This is the basement level. The first floor is mostly commercial, ballpark type things. There's the Pastimes Cafe, Boone's Bar, whatever. And it's food service, food court, food service. The Oriole store is on the first floor, and the ticket offices for people to come up and get tickets. Second and third floor is almost exclusive. Now, I'm talking north of the breezeway, the older section of the building.
The larger part.
The second and third floor are Oriole's offices. 90% of it. There's some other spaces in there, but and the immediate utility room is needed to service that. The fourth floor is the kitchen that services the club level of the ballpark, kitchen and the commissary that services the both the fourth level of the ballpark, and some meeting rooms and basically it's a banquet, a small banquet room there. And we have some commercial tenants in the far northern side of that. There's about 10,000 square feet, 8,000 square feet of commercial tenants.
And private individuals rent out the banquet room?
Yes. Very definitely. In fact, it's a good part of our business, let me go through that. The fifth floor, Stadium Authority offices. The Orioles have a television production studio up there, and then there's some storage space on the fifth floor. Sixth floor is a total banquet room, seats about 400 people, standing room for about 700, and it's used both day of game, and we rent it out for private functions, anything from a wedding, bar mitzvah, christening, you want to have a convention here, a big meeting, whatever. And we have about 15,000, 20,000 square feet of commercial office space at the northern end of that. I'm sorry, that was the sixth floor. Seventh floor and eighth floor is about 50-50 commercial office space and banquet facilities. And the Camden Club is on the seventh and eighth floor. The south part of the warehouse, that 40% or so, is 100% office space. So we have rented out over and above, for non-baseball type functions, we have rented out about 250,000 square feet of general office space. We're competing with the downtown office facilities. And there is about 1,000 commercial tenants come to work in this building or the warehouse building every day.
Now, who gets that money? The Angelus get it?
No. The Maryland State Authority or indirectly the state of Maryland. That's all. All the property here is owned by the Maryland Stadium Authority, including the football stadium. And since we're a state agency, the state of Maryland, the people in the state of Maryland own that.
So they lease it out to the Orioles and
The Orioles and the Ravens. And the Orioles lease gives them certain rights during baseball games and gives us rights during non-baseball games and during baseball games. So the revenue stream here is, for instance, the parking facility. During baseball games, the Stadium Authority and the Orioles split the profits from parking. On non-baseball times, all the profit accrues to the Stadium Authority, which means it's the state. Banquet facilities, when there is a non-baseball related, non-game type banquet, the wedding, for instance, that revenue comes to the Stadium Authority, where the room rent, obviously they have, we don't get the food and beverage type stuff. And there are about 15 different revenue streams up here that pay the Stadium Authority.
Those banquet rooms were one thing my daughters did not consider for their wedding sites.
Well, my daughter was married here. My daughter was married here, I think it was the first wedding that actually took place in Camden Yards. At that time, the football stadium didn't exist. And it was great. I couldn't have asked for anything better. And since then, we've had several weddings and parties and whatever. The catering company does a great job, and we're very competitive.
I read somewhere that if you stood the warehouse up on its side, it would just be about two stories below the Empire State Building.
I don't know how tall the Empire State Building is, but the overall length of the warehouse is approximately 1,035 feet. So without knowing how tall the Empire State Building is, I couldn't tell you.
Close. Right. Okay. Now, the stadium opened on April 6th of 92. And according to my information, 48,876 seats.
Right.
But there is some standing there, though.
Yes, but in those days, I don't think we were selling standing. Or the Orioles were selling standing. And actually, the stadium actually opened 3 days, let's see, April 6th was a Monday. That was the first major league game.
Right.
We had two exhibition games here, the Saturday and the Sunday before. And that was a very interesting time for us because the idea was, well, we were going to shake down the system, see how it worked and all that. And we were supposed to limit the seating to like 30,000 people instead of the full 48,000. Well, the demand for tickets were so high that we opened the gates to 48,000 people, and from that exhibition, both exhibition games, and I believe that first year we had about 60 or 70% sellouts, and from then on, I guess for the first 5-7 years or so, this ballpark was basically selling. You couldn't get tickets, and. Those were a lot of fun. I mean, you know, you worked out problems, you had issues, but the ballpark is a lot of fun with a lot of people in it versus it's not as much fun with fewer people. Now you gotta work harder, but the whole purpose of this, you know, you can make the argument to keep baseball to do but it's to provide value two things. One, to provide a revenue stream for taxes and enhancing the life of the city of Baltimore, to bring money to Baltimore for commerce, for tax purposes, for whatever. So even though the stadium itself may not be, let me be careful how I say this. On an operating basis, we are a net generator of cash. If you drop in the bond issue, payment of the bonds requires the Maryland Lottery is paying for a significant portion of the bonds. And every year it's we provide more money. But anyway, the idea here was to bring commerce to Baltimore. Not necessarily sports. Sports is just a vehicle to bring economic development to the city of Baltimore, to make it a better place to live. And my observation, I'm not a Baltimorean, I'm not a native of this area at all. But if I remember, in 1991, this area was going through some pretty tough economic times. And people here were down, Baltimore, et cetera, who, big deal, Baltimore. We opened the ballpark. That first day, I guess Sports Illustrated put us on the cover. And from then on, for years, the ballpark has defined the city of Baltimore. It's raised the whole tone and the expectations of the people of the city of Baltimore. And I think it made it a much more vibrant and alive place. Now, that's one man's observations from being, and I still consider myself a non-Baltimorean. I don't live in the area, and whatever. I think the ballpark, and now the football stadium, has really redefined what Baltimore is all about. So.
Now I read that it took about 33 months to build.
That's about right.
Was that typical for ballpark?
No, 5 years, 6 years. We had a. That goes back to the stadium. A gentleman by the name of Bruce Hoffman was the second executive director of the Stadium Authority. He was the first one that I knew. And he had come out of the New York State, I think he was in charge of hospital and prison construction. I think it was just hospital construction. I'm not 100% sure on that. And his idea was that if you put it up right, you can put it up fast, if you can maintain the flexibility and get it done right, then people will rise to the challenge. And in those days, the Stadium Authority office was at the World Trade Center at the Inner Harbor. And he could look out the window, and the stories I hear, because I didn't come on until later, the construction was almost finished, but the stories I hear is, if there was a crane here and it wasn't moving, he got on the phone and wanted to know why that crane was sitting idle and what was going on. Very much involved in the making it happen. And he was the driving force behind, I think, that 33 months or 30 months or whatever. The other thing is, and I don't know how much you know about construction, if you have a 2-year window or a 10-year window, the same job can take just as long, and the last 6 months is when everything gets done. So you're much better off having a smaller window, you have a better control of cost, and you motivate your people, because the work expands to fill the time available. This is not my, not something that I've come up with, but it's an axiom that's been around for a lot of years, and it's true in construction. I don't care whether it's a ballpark, whether it's your own home. If you're having a house built, if you get your contractor 2 years or 6 months, he would finish. He'll take the 2 years, but if you only give him 6 months, he'll still finish 5 days late. And we couldn't finish a day late because we had a scheduled baseball game here on that April 6th. Not only that, but in 92, that was the opening day of 92. In 93, we had a scheduled All-Star game here. So there was no slack at all in the schedule. The man made a commitment as executive director that it would be ready, and we met the commitment. The ballpark was ready.
I heard that it's about $110 million. That doesn't sound like much compared to...
Not in today's dollars, and not even back then. Now, again, I'm not 100% other than rough numbers. The actual cost of site procurement, relocating the ongoing businesses, the condemnation procedures, and building the stadium, the actual building of the stadium was probably that $110. The overall cost of land acquisition and everything else was closer to $200 million. But that, as it turned out, since the football stadium is built on the southern part of the property, we didn't have much land acquisition and condemnation costs for football. So overall, how you assign those costs, but the actual construction cost was $100 million, which was never budgeted, but included upgrading Camden Station because that was ready to fall down, and the work in the warehouse. It all came out of the baseball budget, which never existed at the time the budget was put together. So this ballpark was put together and built by people who knew what they were doing and who were really watching the costs.
You know, in between the ballpark and the warehouse is Utah Street.
That's correct.
Now, Book Powell has his big barbecue.
It's a significant barbecue presence out there, and there.
And then also where players hit long home runs, you have. In the
right. Well, first of all, let me talk a little bit about Utah Street. Utah Street is literally the city street. And when the ballpark is closed, off-season like now, or actually even when the team is out of town, or they may even be in town, but there's no game schedule that day, that Utah Street is open to the public as a thoroughfare. Not for vehicle traffic, but whatever. The gates are open. So people can wander around and look at what I believe is a beautiful ballpark in America. Now, during the game, it becomes part of the baseball park, and you close the north and south gates, and you need a ticket to get in. But it also becomes a street festival, because in addition to Boone Powell's place out there, there are various hot dog stands and concession, people who vend everything from baseball bats, believe it or not, we have bats by stand, and he literally turns the bats and put your name, personalized bats, there. There is a barbecue rib place out there, and many other things. It's really a street festival. Before a game, with a big crowd, you can't move out there, and people are just eating and drinking and having a great time. It's a wonderful place to experience. And it's really the first of the ballparks to have something like that. Prior to opening up the ballpark, I got a phone call from some radio talk show in Boston. And I wanted to know, among other things, and the question that sticks in my mind is, how many kinds of hot dogs do you have in the ballpark? And I said, well, there's at least 6 or 8. We have Italian sausage, we have kosher hot dogs, we have knackwurst, we have everything. Weston, you only have this lot of, he used the term, not me, you only have this poor excuse for a hot dog, and it's not even very good. And I said, well, you know, they did it right down here. And Aramark, who is our food service vendor, has won awards for one of the best ballpark or sports venues I've seen here at the ballpark. So it all came together, and this has to be a significant part of that.
Have you ever met Peter Angelos?
Yes, to say hello to him. No, not that. He sit down and have a conversation with him. He is...
Does he come around much?
He is in many of the games, I understand from other people that he is a very avid and really feels personally every loss and every victory. So he's very much an avid baseball fan, very much interested in the team's performance. That's about all I know about the man, other than what I've read in the paper and whatever. So.
Now, the press box, it holds about 110. Is that size-wise a typical for ballparks?
I honestly don't know. My experience with ballparks is primarily limited to here. I've been to other ballparks as a fan. I've been to a couple of press boxes, but the newer ones are being built this way. You know, everything is built from Camden Yards. Don't have no idea about the Orioles, although I was at Shea Stadium and was in their press box, and my recollection is it was smaller, but I couldn't. Now, it's actually a two-level press box because the 110 is the writing press, and above it is the electronic people, which are the TVs and the radio stations, and that's you know, not very many people, but they're in a couple of...
What a view.
It's in the right place. It's among the best seats in the house. And one of the things I like to do is, at the end of the game, if I have a little bit of time, is to go out and sit behind home plate, and sometimes I get a seat right in front of the press box, up in the terrace box there, and you can hear the official score and whatever right out through that. So it's a nice place to be.
Now, how many luxury boxes?
There are 72 actual luxury boxes and three call them party suites, which are just oversized. They seat about 75 to 100 people for a party type.
They're rented out,
yes.
As
on an as-needed basis.
And I presume all the luxury boxes are
rented out after all. I know, for instance, that the Orioles have reserved several for their use, and the Stadium Authority and the Governor have a box which is not rented, whatever. And I know there are some day of pain type boxes that they hold, so that if you want to have a function, you can call them up and rent a box for a particular game. But most, that all the ones available are rented and on a multi-year contract basis.
Now, there are two seats in the park which are red.
Yes.
What is the
reason
for that?
I'm trying to remember whether that was Cal or Eddie Murray. I think that's, it was either where Cal hit a home run or Eddie Murray hit a home run, one of each. I'm not 100% sure.
I think it may have been Murray's 500.
Could be.
Is he hitting?
Can't be, yes. It could be. I think we could go out and take a look at the plaque on the seat, but I didn't.
Ernie Tyler.
Yes.
Tell me about Ernie Tyler.
Ernie Tyler, I guess, is the, if he's not the longest-lived active employee of any baseball team in the country, he's got to be way up there. Ernie Tyler is an institution, at least I think of it that way. I understand that he came on board in 1954. As a part-time job to work behind
when the Royals
first came to Baltimore. And he has been the guy behind the umpire ever since. I also understand that he has never missed a game and has a longer streak. Now, that's Cal's streak. It's significant given the number of games that he's been here. He is still active. He is one of the nicest people you ever want to meet. Knows more about baseball than anybody else I know as far as him. Maybe not the history of the game, because I never discussed that, but the techniques of the game. What makes a good pitcher, what makes a good batter, you know, is this guy going to be any good? You know, I think he could probably be a damn good baseball scout. And his two sons work here. They run clubhouses for the Royals.
And he's all alone just for the weekend.
There you go.
Well, he takes care of the umpires. When I say takes care of, he takes care of the umpires and quit. He is the gentleman who went behind home plate when the he rubs up the baseball, like I mentioned. The umpires rub up the baseballs, but he's the guy that holds the bag with the rubbed up baseballs and brings them out to the umpire and takes care of the umpire's needs. The umpires have a clubhouse just like the teams, of course, obviously smart. And he ensures that they get the amenities that they need, so that their stay here is at least as good as any other ballpark. And it works with the umpires, yeah.
For the ball,
I think he supplies and arranges it, puts it together. That's an aspect of it. He works for the Orioles as the stadium is the building operations guy. I really don't get very much involved in what happens back there. Of course, being here for 12 or 13 years, 14 years, you sort of pick up a lot, but he typically does, but I'm not using a lot of it. His secret formula, well, McDonald's got special sauce, he's got a secret formula.
It comes from Susquehanna River somewhere.
Now, I believe there
also a tourist team
for us. Sure. Now, on non-game day, and afternoon, morning and afternoon, on some of the game days, there is a whole organization of runs tours. We sell tickets to the Orioles store. I might be a ticket office now, and it's going back and forth and doing this sort of thing. And it's about an hour and a half walk, that's where we're out to the ballpark. There are several people who, of all ages, are in trams who are just, 20-year-old kids, and some are people who are in, I guess here and there, 50s, 60s, and retired, and whatever, enjoying doing this. Nobody was, they're playing in nominal size, or whatever. And I give you the history of the ballpark, taking it into spaces. Again, depending on when it was in town, they had to get into the locker room, or not the locker room, but you definitely get into the visiting room, various spaces. So it's a place for very much baseball, and
this goes
right
out here.
Throughout the year, yeah. Obviously, more in the summertime, because it's there are more tourists in town, so when there's a convention, the convention center across the street, or whatever, I can get the same number.
Now, the big reading exam is just a couple blocks away, but I believe they're
going to
be moving
right. The final lease with my group is about 6 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. And that next year, that following year, they should be in the train station. The old train station we talked about, we're refurbishing it. And the museum will have about 50% of the space in there. For exhibits and storage and whatever.
It's not much larger than.
See, now larger than the space they have right now, yes. I think you're right.
Speaking of
neighbors,
I believe you played in center
for Center Field. I've heard several stories. What I've heard about South Aces right now was his father's bar. Oh, Jason's his father's bar. Now, I say, well, they lived at that bar, so that'd be a lot of business.
Yeah,
this is what I mean here. Certainly not a personal
Now, you've got a lot of baseball
pictures
since
they
have this
special scale out. Oh, several. I like this character. It's interesting. And the moat. About 6 months before we opened it, 3 months before we opened the ballpark, I get a call from somebody who I have never heard of. Well, I said, we're doing a portrait of the ballpark, and we'd like to walk around and just get a feel of the place. Do I have any objections? I said, no, not at all. It's just my heart attack. I walked around here. I actually walked back in the bed. It had been like 2 days or 2 weeks. I just thought, I don't know. And a few months after we opened up, this picture shot up in the mail. That's what framed. This picture showed up in the mail, and it was a very nice thank you note for I don't have any questions, that's something I expected. I don't know, but I thought anybody would get a couple of old cash out to the three high umpires to, it's such a fun picture. And the way I look at it, I'm looking at this thing for 10 old years now, and the way I look at it, every time I look at it, I think I had the same large time. This picture is for sale, not by me, but it was in the Inner Harbor, in the middle of the house, and whatever. Kids and their children and whatever. This is just